I'm Gabrielle Jackson, and this is The Full Story.
It's 1:10 on the east coast of Australia. 55% of the vote has been counted in the 2019 election. Our election analyst, Anthony Green, has called the election for the coalition, but it's not clear yet whether they will be governing in...
There's a contradiction at the heart of Conservative politics in Queensland.
Yeah, I thought we'd have a look at some of the swing figures. Let me look at this. In Queensland, this is the bloodbath for Labor, 4.4% to the coalition. Now, I think they're losing two or three seats out of that.
The Liberal National Party, which merged in the state more than a decade ago, has been incredibly successful at federal elections, with some crediting Queensland for Scott Morrison's surprise 2019 election win.
You know, I was hopeful that I would win, but I never expected numbers like this. And Labor is hemorrhaging to One Nation, and they must be feeling, you know, really upset about it tonight.
But it's a completely different story at the state level, with the party being mostly out of power for the past 30 years.
Was going to be a David and Goliath battle, and it certainly was.
Now, with an election 3 months away, tensions within the LNP are starting to bubble to the surface. Today, what's going on inside Queensland's Liberal National Party? It's Monday, the 3rd of August.
You're just going to have to give me a second. My cat is in here and he's shouting. Mm. So you're probably going to pick that on the recording. So just give me 2 seconds. I'll shift him.
Okay. Ben Smee is Guardian Australia's Queensland correspondent.
Ready here.
Ben, before we get into the drama of this story, can you just set the scene a little bit for us? What do we need to know about Queensland party politics to understand this story?
Probably the first thing to understand is that the state is very complex politically. In about 2008, the National Party and the Liberal Party merged to form the LNP, and they end up representing a really diverse range of constituents. You have rural people, you have people in regional Queensland communities, some are conservative and working class, others are small L liberal in the city. And this creates, they like to refer to it as a broad church, but it creates an extremely broad party where you have people who really have very, very differing views, essentially on the same side of politics.
So how has this helped their electoral prospects, Ben?
At a federal level, the Liberal National Party, the LNP, dominates in Queensland. Since 1990, the coalition have pretty much won a majority of seats, bar the 2007 Kevin 07 landslide win for Labor. They've won a majority of seats at every federal election. But it's a completely different story at state level.
It's still too close to call at present, but I'm very hopeful that we will be able to form government in this.
So state Labor have won 10 of 11 elections since 1989.
Wow.
It's a really interesting dynamic, the way that one party has owned state politics, yet at the same time the other tends to dominate federally. The result, when you end up having a party that is so diverse, that merged Liberal and National Party, in a place that's so complex at Queensland, of course it leads to tensions. Those tensions politically always come to the fore when you're less successful. If the LNP had a good story to tell in terms of winning state elections, we probably wouldn't be talking about it in the same terms as we are now. But of course, now we have an election coming up in 3 months' time, and we're starting to see some of those tensions rise to the surface, which is obviously not where any political party wants to be, so close to a poll.
So why has the Queensland Labor Party been so successful at state elections compared to the LNP?
Again, we're talking about a complex state electorally, but we are talking about a state that is, by and large, more conservative, probably has more conservative voters, is probably a better way to put it, than the rest of Australia. So you know, in Brisbane, you have some very progressive areas of inner Brisbane that would be no different to Sydney or Melbourne. And then you have areas like Mackay that are very socially conservative, but also working class. It is a really, really complex political environment, but it is more conservative. So Queensland Labor is without question further to the right than Victorian Labor would be, for instance. And the same is true with the Liberal National Party in Queensland compared to the coalition. So you find this alignment occurring at federal election time where the coalition seems to appeal to people, and perhaps people think that federal Labor is too far to the left or perhaps is more progressive, whereas the state Labor has had far much more success at holding that centre ground, if you like. Why the LNP, I think, is failing is because it doesn't necessarily seem to be able to navigate that complex political territory where you need to be appealing to socially conservative rural constituents on one hand and city folks on the other. And Labor, at a state level, has really done that very well. They call it walking both sides of the street. But on issues like mining and climate change, where you find very, very disparate communities within Queensland who each are wanting a different outcome from the same issue, Labor in Queensland has been largely successful at sort of managing that debate, far better than the LNP.
So what you're saying, if I'm right, is that the Queensland LNP has been unsuccessful because they're really not managing the debates on big issues well. As you said, the LNP is a broad church. Is what's happening within the party also a problem here?
Well, one of the things that we usually see with political parties when it's not successful is a pretty quick call for change, a kind of a bloodletting exercise or a kind of a balancing of the books. So if someone has not run a particularly good campaign, they're pretty quickly ousted as a campaign manager or as a state director. What the LNP in Queensland has done throughout this period is it has largely kept the same group of backroom figures around. The immediate past presidents of the party are the same folks who were the president of the Liberal and the president of the National Party when these parties merged. Those people are still incredibly influential behind the scenes. And so you haven't seen that generational change in the people running the party. And that's starting to create a lot of concern within the party membership, because when you're successful, absolutely, you can ride that success. You can, I guess, put a stake down to say this was something that worked or this is someone who's a successful campaign director. When you're regularly unsuccessful, people do start looking around and starting to find people to blame. And absolutely, people are saying we've been unsuccessful in Queensland for such a long time and that there is a common denominator here, and it is a lot of those people who are on the fringes, in the back room, running campaigns and organising things.
What's the back room, Ben?
So the back room is essentially the party administration, the unelected group of power brokers or faceless men, they're often called, who run the administration of the party, who aren't elected officials or the sort of elected parliamentary leadership. Essentially, they're the ones who are deciding party policy. They have a huge say over who gets to become a candidate, and that also is creating a lot of tension at the moment.
So what's their role in choosing candidates?
In theory, the Liberal National Party's constitution essentially allows local branches to choose their own candidate. It is one of the things that the party prides itself on, really, is that unlike some interstate branches, unlike the Labor Party, the state executive is not really supposed to be able to wield its power and say, we want this candidate in this seat, in theory. But in practice, what is happening and what seems to happen again and again and what party members continuously complain about is the way that discipline and vetting committees appear to be being used essentially so that these backroom power brokers can strike out people who they don't want to run as candidates, or potentially shoehorn in people who are loyalists or who are favourites of theirs. And in doing so, that allows them to maintain their position of influence within the party, because the people who then are in elected positions are you know, essentially loyal to them.
So are you saying that what we end up with is the backroom picking their favourite candidate rather than who's best for the job?
Yes, that's absolutely the concern from people within the party. And one of the things that we're told is that the vetting process seems to be more difficult, more pointed, if you're not one of the party's favoured candidates. The other issue we found in our reporting relates to female candidates and women who go through this vetting process. Now, the current Queensland parliamentary party membership has very few women MPs. They have a number of female candidates standing. But what we're hearing about the vetting process for women who want to be MPs, who want to run for the Liberal National Party, is quite concerning.
Okay, well, you know, nothing riles me up more than this, Ben. So can you tell us a bit about what's going on there?
So we spoke to a number of people who had gone through the LNP's vetting. We wanted to kind of understand what the process was, why it was seen as so problematic. It's become the real bone of contention among upset party members. They all talk about the vetting process, the way the vetting process is run. And when we talked to people who'd been through that process, mostly women, we heard that they were asked things like how many sexual partners they had had, and could they name them? They'd been asked if they'd ever posed for nude photographs. We had an instance where, and this is in a court transcript, where a working mother claimed that it was implied that she wasn't capable of doing her job as an elected official because she had to pick up her children from school. There are people who say that the commentary within these sessions has gone to their sexuality. The nature of the vetting seems to be problematic, and not everyone views it as problematic. Even people who have been through the process say that they understand that it's designed to be a pretty extreme way of introducing people to the nature of politics. And if you can get the idea is if you can get through that, you can get through anything. But there are certainly people who have been through it who said they felt very uncomfortable.
But are the male candidates asked these questions too?
Yes, as far as I'm aware, we spoke more to female candidates than males, but it doesn't seem to be something that's asked only to females.
Right. I just wonder how many dads were disqualified for having to pick their kids
up.
Well,
I certainly haven't come across a complaint along those lines in this process. And I guess this is kind of at the heart of the issue here is we're talking about vetting committees that are not exclusively male, but the big characters on these committees are male. You know, the chair of these committees, the state director, the state president, the people who are actually sitting on these committees, the ones who are asking the questions, and the ones that you kind of know are the ones who wield the power within the party, they are men. And the fact that these men are then asking these questions of women, they're asking quite intimate things of women that some of them say that, you know, they haven't told their husband some of the things they were asked in this meeting. That's where this process seems to be problematic and has upset members of the party.
And so what's happened? How many women got through the process, or were they discouraged by it so much that they dropped out?
Well, the LNP does have a large number of female candidates running at this upcoming election. And
well, look, I've got one message here today. I will not be bullied by the backroom boys of the LNP. Now, I am proud of the generational change that I have led through the parliamentary team. And now that is evidenced by the 10 outstanding female candidates that we've got running in winning seats.
The leader, Deb Frecklington, has said that she's proud of that number and the fact that they were pre-selected in a merit-based process without quotas. But absolutely, there are women who have dropped out of the pre-selection process, seemingly because of the way that it was run.
Now, it is disappointing that there are a few blokes sitting in the back room who want things to go back to the way they were. Well, unlike the Premier, who is beholden to the union movement, I will not be bullied by outside forces.
So the back room, the so-called faceless men, who've been in power for a long time and aren't prepared to step back, that's leading to a lot of the issues because of this tension?
Yeah, absolutely it has. When you have a process that is confronting but also controversial, that's also kind of politically loaded, and within any political party there's going to be kind of pushing and shoving. But when you end up with that impression that this sort of a process being run by influential people within the party, being run in a kind of a problematic way where people in the party feel as though they've been hard done by, that's the nature of that sort of a process is going to be controversial, and it certainly has led to problems within the party.
Next, the power grab bleeds into policy. Is this the only way the backroom is exerting power? What about in terms of policy? Do they have any influence there?
Absolutely. We've seen with things particularly like abortion law reform in Queensland, which was voted on more recently, and also things like voluntary assisted dying, we've absolutely seen the backroom attempting to influence the way that MPs vote.
Legalised abortions in Queensland are a step closer, with a parliamentary committee backing the state government's historic laws. It's planning a conscience vote when the bill is introduced later this month, but the LNP isn't announcing where it stands just yet.
What happened with the abortion vote?
So in 2018, Queensland voted to make legal abortion. The criminal code from 1899 was the most recent legal instrument with regard to abortion. It made abortion a crime, and Labor brought laws to Parliament and passed them that legalised abortion. Now, it was a very, very fraught debate. The LNP allowed its members a conscience vote. In theory...
Close the bars. Honourable members, the question is that the bill be now read a third time, for which a division has been called. Pursuant to Standing Order 1042, this division will be a personal vote.
The vote allows Parliament members to vote according to their personal belief rather than along party lines. The new law allows...
Eyes will pass to the right of the chair, noes will pass to the left of the chair. To assist with the count, I ask members to sit in their allocated seats.
But in practice, you had the president of the LNP at the time threatening them both before and after their vote that the party's position was opposed to the legalisation of abortion, and that essentially threatening with their pre-selection if they then ended up exercising their conscience vote and supporting the laws. Now, three MPs did, and there was a real showdown within the party over that.
Honourable members, the result of the division is ayes 50, noes 41. The question is resolved in the affirmative. Yeah. Order. Order. Order, members. Order.
That swing against the Liberal Party in Wentworth comes as the LNP here in Queensland faces its own internal battle. Three MPs who voted to legalise abortion in last week's conscience vote have angered some within the party, who are pushing for them to be disendorsed.
Did any of them lose their pre-selection?
Ultimately, in 2019, the three MPs who voted in favour of decriminalisation of abortion were spared a pre-selection ballot. And I think that was largely to save the party the embarrassment that would have followed had they attempted to roll them.
Mm.
but it remains a very sore point among the party membership. Both those who believe the party should have held a firm kind of ideological line on abortion, but also those who believe vehemently in the notion of a conscience vote, and especially the small L liberals in the party. There are fewer of them than there have been in the past, but there are still members of the party who do really hold liberal values dear, and the notion of a conscience vote really is at the heart of that.
And why is having a conscience vote so important?
Conscience votes are important because you're meant to be able to vote freely, particularly on things that are matters of life and death that aren't typically sort of part of the ideological battle of politics. In this case, we've had instances where people were essentially threatened for not sticking to the party line, which really just runs counter to the whole principle of a conscience vote in the first place.
And what's happening with voluntary assisted dying?
Queensland voluntary assisted dying advocates have taken their campaign to state parliament after accusing Queensland of dragging its feet on reform. Currently, Victoria is the only state where the terminally ill can legally end their own lives.
Last year and this year, we had a parliamentary committee looking at the issue, and then a law reform commission review, which will be drafting legislation on voluntary assisted dying that will ultimately be handed to the next government after the October election. And again, in theory, the LNP have said they're going to give members a conscience vote, but it remains to be seen whether they would ever bring a vote to the floor if they win government. And at the same time, MPs have been actively discouraged from engaging with people who are campaigning about voluntary assisted dying, holding community forums on the issue, or really bringing this up with their constituents in the lead into an election.
What does the Queensland population think about voluntary assisted dying?
Well, the Queensland population is during the parliamentary committee process.
That is the strong message of today. Don't forget that 80% of Queenslanders are calling for voluntary assisted dying laws to be passed in our parliament this term.
The parliament actually did a quite detailed poll of the Queensland population. They found that 80% of Queenslanders are in favour of voluntary assisted dying.
So please, Premier, hear the voice of the terminally ill. Thank you.
We come from a farming background, and I felt I could care for the animals on our farm better than I could care for my mother.
And when you talk about it being a conservative state, that is a really startling number. It's the sort of thing that many of, you know, older people who you might think of as natural Liberal National Party supporters actually believe in, particularly as they get to that stage in their own lives. So it's something that is it's a really fraught debate for the party, because you do have some very conservative Christian members of the party who are quite influential as well in terms of its policy direction. But at the same time, how do you run a party that then has policy positions that appeal to enough people that you might win government? This is the nuts and bolts of the challenge that the LNP faces. It, on these sorts of social issues, they are very much out of touch with progressive or more progressive city views.
And you touched on this earlier, but I can't help keep being brought back to this idea of the Liberal Party's like original ethos, you know, the idea that you're individual and you can have your own thoughts and ideas, this kind of very tight control over not only who gets elected but what policies they're allowed to vote for or even talk about. Isn't that anathema to the Liberal Party, Ben?
Well, yes, but we're also not really talking about the Liberal Party, right? Mm. We're talking about the Queensland Liberal National Party, which immediately after its formation did absolutely have room for small L liberals. Whether or not it does in its current form, I think, is very much up for debate. We have had people who would fall into that category, liberal moderate, small L liberals, like Jan Stuckey, who was an MP who quit the party recently and raised concerns that they were moving to the Christian right. You have MPs who voted in favour of legalising termination of pregnancy, who had to sit in a room where the party president essentially took them to task in front of the entire Liberal National Party State Council, told them that they should consider whether they fit with the Liberal National Party. It is increasingly obvious that the Liberal National Party is a different party to an initial kind of merger of the Nats and the small L Liberals. It's a very, very complex party. There are a number of factions. But one thing that's really clear is that old school, small L, almost progressive, pro-business Liberal doesn't really exist to the extent that they did before.
So what's their guiding philosophy then? What does the LNP in Queensland stand for?
I think you'd have to ask the LNP, to be honest, because it's very hard to know. I mean,
g'day, I'm George Christensen, federal member for Dawson, down here at the Seaforth's Men's Shed.
There are characters like George Christensen, for interest.
There's a lot of gear here, mate, isn't it?
Who is a federal MP, obviously, but who is Catholic.
I have a religious habit of watching The Passion of the Christ every Good Friday because it's just so visceral and makes the whole thing so real.
I know who is very strongly led by his conservative social beliefs. But in an economic sense, could end up in some instances possibly lining up with Labor a lot more than other members of his party might do. Now, you have, on the other hand, city conservatives or sort of suburban conservatives like Peter Dutton, who is very much a conservative Liberal. It's just such a complex party. There are people who sit beside one another who, in kind of any kind of rewriting of the political system, you'd never have on the same side of an argument. But this is what the LNP is at the moment. So in terms of what it stands for, you have to look at, I guess, at its policies. But it even has a hard time kind of articulating a vision for the state beyond its individual policies.
Now, Pete, there's plenty of talk, too, that Deb Frecklington simply doesn't have the cut through with voters. Obviously, an extremely crucial thing leading up to the state election, just 4 months away. And there is talk as well that if there was to be
so
a challenge...
So the election is in 3 months' time. What do you think is going to happen to the LNP between now and then?
Well, I think the coronavirus situation really does kind of relay the entire political landscape when it comes to the election. There were any number of issues that were likely to be quite fraught in Queensland, particularly things like coal, resources, climate. Those sorts of things that would play out very differently in different places. But I think ultimately, while ever the coronavirus situation is still front of mind, people are going to be voting based on the leadership that they've seen exhibited and also based on an economic recovery plan. That really puts Labor in the box seat. Now, while we've been talking about the Liberal National Party and all of their problems, you have to simply look at the polling to show that they're not out of this contest by any stretch. You know, the polling, the limited polling that has been done does show the Liberal Party neck and neck with Labor. Where that is problematic for them is that the polling has also shown Deb Frecklington, who is the state leader, to be unpopular relative to the current Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk. Ultimately, when you have one leader who is more popular than another, and an election that you expect to be about leadership, a lot of people are really looking at that, thinking that Labor is in a very, very strong position.
Thanks very much, Ben. It's been great talking to you.
Thanks, Gabrielle.
Many thanks to Ben Smee for his time. You can read more of his reporting on this and the rest of Queensland at theguardian.com. Thanks to all the listeners who have left us a rating or review. We really appreciate it. This episode was produced by Ellen Leibeater and Joe Koning. The executive producers are Miles Martignoni and me, Gabrielle Jackson.